One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent, returnee from rock bottom and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame. The highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn but are so grateful that we did. So, anxiety. It's something that the majority of us will struggle with at some point in our lives. What causes the anxiety, though, tends to alter over the course of time, depending on environment, life, all that, etc. Things that once seemed untouchable or unbelievably frightening become less so, but reprogramming our brains to see things differently takes a lot of work. My guest, comedian Thomas Green, and I are discussing all this and more today. Okay, so it is 2015. 2015, what a year. I don't know why I literally say what a year every single time. We could be talking about 1887. I'm like, oh God, what a time. Fuck knows what was happening. 2015. But I don't know if anyone's ever been to Rickmansworth, but Rickmansworth is essentially a part of London that doesn't feel like London at all. It feels like...
Hertfordshire.
Because it is. It's meant to be in London. It's Hertfordshire. It's bloody lovely. But weirdly, and this is also taking place in October, which is my favourite month of the year, but clearly not good enough. Not good enough for my guest today. So it is October in Rickmansworth, 2015, and in this moment, Tom, why do you think you've got no friends?
Oh, because... to be honest with you, I just moved to the country, right. So I didn't have any friends.
Literally.
I struggle with anxiety, and at the time, I just moved from Australia in August 2015. I'd left a very, I talk about this in my shows, but I was in a very religious cult situation in Australia.
Wow.
A lot of anxiety stemmed from that. And then I left it all, met my now British fiancé in Melbourne, and then moved here. And then I found myself in Rickmansworth in a friend's backyard after a night at the pub. The Coach and Horses, as you probably know it, in like the, is it like the garden house? Or what do you call it out in the garden? How you've got like a little outhouse where people can be.
A shed? What?
Like in someone's backyard. Not at the pub. Not the beer garden.
Oh, God, they sell them at the bloody garden centre. You know what I'm talking about. You go outside and there's a little house you can sit in.
Yeah, people like go out there for pints or whatever in their house in the summer or in the winter, wherever.
A summer house.
So they're all in there. And everyone is just chilling, having some bevs, And then they just pulled out a few bags of weed and I was trying my absolute best not to have a panic attack because drugs for me just associated with, like, from growing up, it was a big no-no.
Really?
And so I was just in that situation really panicking because I was in this tiny little, I guess, hot box.
Yeah.
And I was hot boxing with everyone.
Yeah.
And I'd never experienced such close quarters to drugs. And I was there in this moment, just sat there just like, oh, God. And also I had, you know, my, at the time, new girlfriend that I'd just moved across the world for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to be cool and chilled in this moment, but I'm sort of like, she knew I struggled a little bit with anxiety, and so I sort of just gave her a little, like, tap on the leg, like, hey, like, I'm, and she's like, looked at me like, chill out. And I was like,
hey, be cool.
Goddamn boomer. No. But that was like, literally, I was in that moment. And, hi, Caddy.
This is Mickey as a part of the group. Mickey's joining the chat, everybody.
Yeah, she has. She's walking in just like, yeah, what's going on? I wonder if she can spell my cats on me.
What's up, bro? Okay, so, like, she's going, hey, man, be cool. And you're kind of just trying to be.
I thought you were with a cat then. The cat's coming and going, hey, man, be cool. I've just been outside for a toke. Chill out a bit.
This whole situation just reads to me like a sort of after-school special. Yeah. Someone being like, hey, take, and everyone holds a spliff, like, I know I'm like this or like this. And like, I'm sorry for the, obviously those listeners, I'm sort of holding it in a way that you would not, one would not hold a spliff. They're going, hey, take it. And then a big sign comes up going, if you smoke weed, you will die.
Why are you holding it like a coffee?
That's how far I like
this spliff is quite hot. Yeah, no, we, it was, because I think I'd never seen, like, I'd seen people because of comedy. I did a little bit of comedy before I came over, a little bit of stand-up. But I used to be a teacher, so I was sort of like doing, I was a primary teacher in Adelaide, and I was doing a little bit of stand-up out there before I moved over. And so I'd seen during the festivals and stuff, I'd seen people taking drugs and doing drugs, but I was always able to be removed from it.
Yeah, you're slightly separate from it, yeah.
Yeah, and because my brother growing up did a lot of the drugs and a lot of the harder things, so I kind of, you know, did rehab and stuff, so I always associated that with that. So I was then in this moment in Hotboxville with everyone sort of packaging, or the lads really packaging up what they were doing, but that I didn't realise that you could have it, like, blocked. Like, they were like, it was like, you know, sort of like taking it out of the alfoil paper wrapping and they were sort of doing their thing. And I was like, what is happening? And I was like, it smells quite strong in here. So that moment, that anxiety really flooded in. And I didn't really cope well with it.
Right, okay.
Because I think, for me, anxiety sort of was always a thing that I'd had since childhood.
Right.
Like when I was five, I went to psychologist as a five-year-old kid because I just never really understood. I used to call it my worries.
So
I was five and I'd just feel anxious. But we discovered what it was as there was some just stuff happening at the school that sort of would set me off and I'd feel anxious and paranoid.
Okay.
So I sort of grew up with anxiety and it came in and out. And then when I was a teenager, it sort of came back in quite heavy. And I was sort of always dealing with it. I say dealing with it, but like not really, like, because I also didn't like to open up and talk about it with what I called a worry doctor,
psychologist.
So, it caused me to miss out on quite a lot of things in my teenage years. Like, I remember, like, I didn't go to our year nine school camp, which everyone had the best time ever because they literally went out in the bush for a week, all your mates, and I didn't go because I was like, I don't sleep well at night, that sort of thing.
Yeah, 100%.
So, fast forward to like me as an adult, and I had just gone, fuck this in Adelaide and moved to the UK. And I was just so exposed, because I just was like, oh my God, it'd be stressful for anyone. I'd never been to the country, by the way, I'd never even visited London. And I just flew in to Heathrow, like, right, new life, new me.
Jesus.
And then,
and we are not the friendliest people.
There's me. Hey, Gowan.
What's up? How you going?
sir, this is the tube. We don't speak to anybody. Which now, by the way, is, I do have to apologize as well. Like, if I pick up on your accent, it happens all the time because I feel like I've assimilated fully to British culture.
Yeah.
And particularly like the South. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
I like my own space sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I like to just sort of listen to my AirPods, listen to music.
I love it though.
I also get very impatient with people.
You're so fucking impatient.
I have become the angriest driver.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I kind of, look, I'm going to be honest, and this is going to sound like full of myself, but I always pride myself on being someone who's friendly and kind that people want to be around because I always would want people to be that way. So I sort of emulate, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I just 100%. Like getting along. I never like conflict.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
That's the other problem with my anxiety is I could never challenge people. I always
I have that. Yeah. Can't at all.
Can't challenge people.
No, I'd just much rather just hold on to it because then at least I can control it.
Yes.
Rather than handing it to someone else when I don't know what the fuck's going to happen. It's like, do you know what? It's like having one of those volcanoes. You know when you made a volcano for a school project at school? Not me, because my parents never helped me with anything. But like, Jesus Christ. But, you know, when you, it's like baking soda and vinegar or whatever.
Yeah.
You can pour it. That's how I feel about conflict, is that if I go pour the vinegar and it's going to go, boom. Oh, sorry, Nikki. Sorry, Nikki just shot himself.
And everyone around in the classroom is watching going, whoa.
Whoa. Oh, my God, this is so messy. Who's going to clear this up? Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's how I feel about fucking conflict. At least if I hand over my upset to somebody else, I don't know how they're going to handle it.
Mm.
But at least if I keep it to myself, then I know what to do.
Yeah.
Just pack it away in a Danny box.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was kind of like that in that moment, just I think more than several moments.
Yeah.
But then just sort of like coming here, I think, and adapting to such a, it is a different culture.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
But also like lifestyle, the amount of people.
Yeah.
Do you know? Because I'm from Adelaide, which Adelaide, it's a capital city of South Australia, but it's also the smallest city. So everyone kind of talks about it being like a glorified country town.
Really?
Because it's not a big city. Okay. Like there's a few million people in Adelaide, but it's quite spread out over the suburbs, do you know what I mean?
Right.
Because then I come to London and I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Mm. And then and my first few months were in Watford. So
I'm so sorry.
I was on a particular.
I'm so sorry.
I was on this one particular road because basically my mate from uni,
right. He
was teaching over here at the time, and I was moving across, and he needed a flatmate, and he goes, the timing of this is incredible. So it all lined up amazingly well.
Right.
And so I made the transition pretty smooth, and being a teacher at the time as well, like it was pretty easy to get everything sorted, teaching, your NI number, all that, you know.
People trust you.
Yeah. And then I come across it. And also I had the smooth of the transition was the fact that, you know, my mum's Glaswegian.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, so I got my British passport like that. So I had the easiest transitions coming over. So I was like, this is easy.
Yeah.
And then my first week and a half living on Whippendale Road in Watford, it's quite a long stretch. And at the time, because right now I drove back down there the other week. And
just have a look.
Just have a little cheeky little peek. No, I was just driving through Watford. Yeah. And I just went, I'll go via Whippendale.
Yeah.
And it's changed heaps. Like, there's heaps more stuff built. But when I was there, there was this big block of like industrial buildings, and it was very overcast and grey. And I hadn't seen the sun. And I genuinely think I got the sads because I was like, I don't have any vitamin D.
I was like,
what is happening? And so that was, I think that added to it all was I was like, I have just come totally, essentially empty-handed to another country.
Yeah.
And living on a road which was quite grey, and the particular area was quite bleak.
Yeah.
And I was supply teaching. I didn't have a car at the time, so it was just me and buses. Mm. And the reason I say that is not more public transport or anything, because I use it all the time, but I think the freedom of having a car and being able to go to schools that I wanted to supply teach at, whereas opposed to having a localized area that I could only work in.
Sure, yeah.
So it was seeing the same things all the time.
Yeah.
Within like a, you know, a rideable stretch if I was push bike or whatever. So.
And if you've got ADHD, that's tough.
Yes.
That's so tough. I can't do it. I'm seeing the same thing. I'm not being stimulated. I need to.
It
just freaks you out.
Yeah. I need to be out and about and seeing different things and meeting new people. So yeah, I felt my anxiety was quite peaky.
Yeah.
When I first moved over.
And then you got shoved in the hot box.
Mm-hmm. And shoved in the hot box.
Yeah.
And there I was, and so for my now fiance was sort of like, just chill out, man.
Yeah, come on.
And she was like, she knew that it was fine. I'll be absolutely fine. And I sort of just removed myself from it, from memory.
Mm.
And we didn't stay for that much longer because it was the end of the night anyway. Mm. And I sort of associated those guys doing that with it. Not necessarily being wrong, but I was like, I didn't know how to be okay with it myself.
Mm.
So I think I was sort of a learning curve, like, you know, hey, this isn't necessarily like a bad situation because I'd only ever associated drugs with negativity.
Right.
And I'm not here to advocate drugs, but I just mean...
I don't even see drugs be bad when, hey, guys.
There's some positives.
There's some real positives out there.
But the only times I'd ever seen things were
I feel like maybe it's like to the excess of it being bad, of like it being, it not being like a managed thing, it being a very like dangerous thing.
Yes, so I'd only ever seen... you know, the Ambos at a music festival looking after people who'd overdosed or my brother in a rehab center or do you know what I mean? Like, I'd seen some people, you know, take acid at a comedy festival and then, you know, go absolutely bananas on stage and I was like, oh my God, like, it was just, I'd always associate it with like, because as I think what it was the control factor.
Yeah.
So with anxiety, and we're saying with ADHD and anxiety, not having control freaks you the fuck out.
Freaks you out.
So I felt like I personally could never do drugs because I felt like, so I don't drink anymore.
Do you not?
No.
Just so.
Yes.
Yeah, girl. Yes, queen.
I love that for you.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I feel like because with drinking, I felt like I never went to excess anyway because I could never really handle it. So
that's why we differ.
Yeah. You're a pro. Whereas like I feel like I could moderate in terms of like you if you have a certain amount of drinks, you know, sort of around where you're going to feel, unless you, of course, you know, start doing shots, whatever. But, you know, if you have a few pints, you know what you're going to be at four.
Yeah.
Whereas I thought that you couldn't really monitor it with weed or whatever.
Yeah.
And
you've
sort of just got to go with it, and I didn't have the carefree nature of being lack of control of a situation to just roll with it.
Well, I guess as far as you were concerned, that you could take two puffs of it and then be on a stage at Glasgow, like getting in a headlock with fucking Bon Jovi, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, exactly.
Bon Jovi.
I'm 36, I'm not that old. You're like, Thomas, how was Woodstock? So I think that's where my anxiety throughout my whole life stemmed from, lack of control. And that, like back in primary school, it was these kids who were naughty, so to speak, and acting up. And I was a good little kid.
Mm.
So I would see that and not be able to have control of that situation. And I would feel anxious because I was like, oh, my God, like, you know, the teacher hasn't seen them do that. And, oh, my, you know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you mean. And actually that's like something I haven't really thought about before and something that I did a lot as well, and I hasn't even entered my conscience that like that was probably anxiety.
Oh wow.
But going because I don't know about you, but I find it if say I'm in a room with a few people and two of them are like their energy is like really angry or like really upset or like there's something going on, even if I'm not a part of it, I'll be like, oh my God, there's something happening, and I can't be normal right now.
Yep.
And it's just that thing of like, I don't know if it's something to do with being with them, an empath or being ADHD or just having severe anxiety, when you're like, this thing is happening and I cannot not ignore it. I cannot not take this thing on as well. Because there are some people who are like, oh, that's not that fucking thing, I don't care.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
I'm like, guys, someone's got to do something about this.
Yeah.
When it stems from like such an early age, and I really hated getting in trouble.
Oh my God. I know exactly what you mean. I don't know if you felt this, but yeah. I used to have it when we had a really strict deputy principal or head teacher.
There always fucking is.
Always.
My secondary school deputy headmistress was called Una. I will never, ever forget that. Because what? If you're called Una, absolutely no way you're doing anything else with your life other than wear grey and be a deputy school
headmistress. I believe Una does mean grey.
Una.
Una.
I'm sure there are many beautiful Unas out there. In fact, I think I know one, but it was UNA and it was terrifying.
We had a Mr. Wyatt in primary school, and he had the strongest aftershave. Like, what I mean is, this is how terrifying this man was, okay? You knew if you were sent on an errand from your teacher to a different classroom to go get some extra paper or whatever, you would know if Mr. Wyatt had been in there and told a class off, because they'd be dead quiet and it smelt of him. That's how scary this guy was.
Oh my.
It was so bad.
How do you think he felt walking away from those situations?
I think he fucking loved it. Prick.
He fucking loved it.
He did. He walked out like, oh, more tears for my juice jar.
Just a few more and the spell will be complete.
Yeah, I swear he didn't drink water. He just had...
Yeah, children's tears.
Yeah, he just had children's tears.
Fucking hell. But, oh no, sorry, you were saying something about the deputy head teachers or the head teachers.
Oh, yeah, so he would come into the classroom.
Right.
Or, it happened in secondary school with different teachers, but I just remember specifically him, that when he came in, you knew it was him pulling someone out to tell them off. An incident had occurred. He kind of dealt with the discipline in the school. So, because our head teacher was like the nicest man ever. Like, because I used to do athletics, and I remember, I was talking about this the other day, that I remember going into the office, running an errand again. Remember, he always ran errands. And I went to the head teacher's near the front office, and he like got me to do like, oh, stop what you're doing. Come and show me how you get out of the blocks when you do a sprint start. Like, he was such a lovely head teacher.
Mate.
He knew every kid. He knew what you were into. That's the thing. Whereas the deputy, Mr. Wyatt, was
couldn't
just...
It
was like good cop, bad cop. You know what I mean? Like, he'd come in just like, what have you done? no one's this nice.
Yeah.
So I was going to say was he would come into the room and I had this... And I hadn't done anything wrong.
Yeah.
I'd done absolutely nothing wrong. It's like when you're driving down the road and you see a cop car and you go, fuck, are they here for me?
You're like,
I've been doing is driving. I haven't sped. I've done nothing wrong. I haven't even looked at my phone.
Yeah.
So like when he walked in, I was so scared that I was going to be in trouble, and I always thought it was for me.
Yeah.
And it was that, and I think, you know, I don't even know what I think that stemmed from. The fear of being in trouble, like you're saying.
Yeah.
But also, why the fuck did I think it was for me? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Because I was not a naughty kid.
No. It's like, I think it's just like, it's just a certain amount of catastrophe of going, this would be the scariest thing that can happen.
Yeah.
It's the same way, like, sort of weird backstory of, like... There are these tunnels in near Highgate, which like they're old train tunnels, and there's little openings that you can get into, and
you
walk along. They're fucking they are the darkest thing.
Yeah, okay.
They're like pitch black, and I remember going in there and going like a little jaunt in there, and in my head I was like, I know that probably the worst thing in here is going to be another person. That is genuinely the worst thing that can be in here.
Yeah, that is actually terrifying.
But
don't watch Pennywise or anything. Yeah. Jesus Christ. I'm here for you. Hello, Emily.
It sounds like Winnie the Pooh. He does. Honey. You know what I mean? He sounds just like that.
If you're in the middle of a tunnel and someone goes, honey, you would... I reckon you'd learn how to fly because you
shit like a fucking piece of dynamite up the arse. But I was like, the worst thing that can be in here is another person. And also, I wasn't on my own; I was with somebody else.
Right.
I was like, the worst thing that can be in here is another person, and we can scarf it; it'll be fine. But I was like, but what if?
Yeah.
What if this is where the Babadook lives? You know what I mean?
What an Australian reference.
Rationally, yeah. I know that it's not, but then I was like. Well, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. That thing can follow me home.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whether it's in a story or in a book, you can't get rid of the Babadook. Babadook.
So terrifying.
So terrifying. But it was like, but it's that thing of going, you rationally know that it's not for you. But the idea of it being something else is so terrifying that you're like...
So terrifying.
It's the same way that monsters under the bed where you have to jump off... I always have to like propel, like I was doing the fucking long jump off the bed because I was like, something's going to grab me.
Yeah.
Maybe no, it's not.
Yeah.
I want to go back to you in the hot pod.
hot pod.
The hot box in Rickmansworth. When this sort of happening, what kind of transpired after that? Did you just sort of stay in the environment? Did you get yourself out? Like what went on?
I remember trying to cool, calm and collected.
Sure.
And removing myself. So just going to the kitchen, I think when I got a drink, someone else came out to get a drink and I sort of stalled them by having a conversation, chatting, having a nice way, because I felt safe in that environment to just have a chat in the kitchen.
Mm.
And so we're just chatting away. And so I think that's what happened then, sort of, went back in, and then I think, as I was saying, it was the end of the night, sort of left. Mm. But this sort of fear went on for a while because, of course, at festivals and things and then moving into comedy full-time, you see a lot of it.
Yeah.
A lot of people, and so people are so loose with it.
Oh, like, God, yeah, it's fucking brazen. It's the same with acting.
Mm.
Sorry, guys, I'm not outing you all, but we all fucking know. Like, it's brazen as shit, and it's like... It's quite, I think, especially like being a sober person, you are more aware of just like how loose it is.
Yeah.
And it becomes, and it's difficult to let it sort of silkily slide by as easily as you used to.
Yeah. And I think as well, because so for different drugs are popular here.
Yeah.
As opposed to Australia. Australia obviously has a lot of weed, but also there's a big meth issue.
I was going to say, is it the meth? Yeah.
There's a meth, but you see that and people automatically go, oh, meth, don't touch it, because you see people...
Cocaine, fine, but...
This is the thing, though. Cocaine in Australia is so unbelievably expensive. Hardly any... It's not as accessible as the UK. And a lot of people here have cocaine. And I started seeing that a lot in these festivals and places.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God. And for me, that was a movie drug.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny Depp Blow.
Yeah. Boogie Nights.
Like, why?
I'm a mom of the movies.
And I was like, oh, my God, everyone does cocaine.
Yeah.
And so that, for me, I was like, whoa. And then I'd sort of be like, oh, like, has it... Like, my anxiety would kick in. I'd be like, oh, my God, that person just did that right next to me.
Yeah.
And has that powder somehow come up into my airways?
Oh, shit. So I used to
shit. And I was like, I'd freak out. And I'd be like, oh, did they...
Yeah.
Were they near my drink? Like, or you know what I mean? Like, just that prompt.
Well, it's just a spiral. It literally just goes... Blah, 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 and it just snowballs out and out and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. 100%. And you're going, maybe it's this. And also this. It's really terrifying. Then you can't get back to the root of it, and then you're just a jumble of nerves and like
feeling. And because of those feelings and those nerves, you then start to think, maybe I am affected by it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you think, exactly, is this me or is this the drug?
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome. Like, what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. no deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You left, yeah, this church. Was this a family thing or was it something? I mean, you don't have to talk about it.
No, it's fine. Absolutely fine. When I was young, we were going to a quite strict church. And right. So I left that church in my teens because I was, just to sort of backtrack for a second, my fear and anxiety, I think from a childhood, I was so scared of hell.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was too young to understand the concept of what people were throwing at you.
Yeah.
With religion.
Yeah.
And I, you know, indoctrinated from a young age with this ancient text telling me that if you don't do X, Y, and Z, you're going to hell forever.
Yeah, threatened with hell every single day.
Yeah. It's terrifying.
No wonder you're fucking scared of getting in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right? Well, there you go. Mm. There you go. This, the heart part. but yes, I had this complete fear of hell. And then so in my teenage years, I didn't want to upset my family too much by leaving our strict Baptist church.
Mm.
So I went to what I thought was a cool one.
Right.
And ended up being kind of like a Pentecostal cult.
Shit.
So I had that influence. Then when I finally left that at the age of 28, I was adult and I had my complete grid and perspective of the world and everything that I've been told flipped because I left it all and I realized I didn't believe it.
Yeah.
And that this life became way more valuable
because
it wasn't about an eternity. It was about my life right now and making the most of it.
Yeah.
So, which is quite freeing, but also it's terrifying to then have that move to a new country. So just before I moved over, I was getting therapy. And we're talking through it, and she was like, "Jesus Christ!" Ironically, she's like,
"Not him."
You've been through a lot, and that's sort of, I think, a lot of anxiety was me breaking out of these molds,
yes,
and experiencing things that people would probably work through in their adolescent years.
Mm.
But I was 28 years old and around drugs for the first time and working out where I felt safe and what I felt comfortable with because I'd always been in a community of people, saw the same people every week, did the same thing every week. Like you said, ADHD, I was like, hey.
Yeah.
It was, oh my God.
Yeah, fucking terrifying.
And so I think my perspective being freed, along with the fact that I was letting go of a lot of molds and control factors where I wasn't in control, people controlling me, that caused a lot of anxiety because I was working myself out.
Yeah.
And so then I was in that whole box. And I think it wasn't just the drugs. It was also me experiencing a situation for the first time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It doesn't really, it's not just about the drugs. It's not just about this thing that's in front of you. It's about going, my God, my entire life and my entire existence has changed so drastically.
Yes.
Yeah. How am I going to adapt to this situation?
100%.
Yeah.
I'm in a foreign country. I'm 28 years old, but I'm doing something that a lot of UK people would do when they're 14.
Yeah.
People would smoke weed in the park.
Yeah.
I never had that. I never did that. I didn't drink until I was 19, 18.
All those guys have been doing it for 15 years. It's like,
they're professionals. Give a
literally.
Yeah.
Absolute praise. And then, an even factor.
No. And so I think that for me was a massive eye-opener.
Mm.
And sort of working through that and over the last however many years now, I've been here for 8 years, and I think, you know, anxiety can still flare up here and there with different things. You know, I think sometimes it's triggers, but it's never as bad as it was because I think once I left religion, and I didn't have this continuous fear of hell and demonic things surrounding me and all this kind of stuff. And that's no disrespect to the people that do believe, but for me, I was like, nope. And so once I broke free of that, that let go of a lot of anxiety.
Sure.
Because I think that was something that was there from childhood.
Yeah.
Deep rooted.
Yeah, deep, deep rooted. And I think people underestimate what it's like to have to reprogram yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. Because having to literally reprogram your entire brain and understand for the first time that's something that you believed was like unequivocally true, real. Yep. Anything that's something that you couldn't see an alternative to is maybe not the absolute. It's like, it's like finding out that, I don't know, the fucking Loch Ness Monster's been seen in the Thames. You're like, that's yeah. that's not, can't, guys.
Yeah.
That's so stupid.
Yeah.
And having to, like, and allowing your brain to open up to a different path is so weird.
Yes.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to do that. I think, like, the way I described it to someone the other day is, like, you kind of... you can see something so clearly in front of you, and it's often the difference between what we want and what we need, but you can see something so clearly, it's so present, it's like, it's really, really familiar. And then there's this thing that's like a fuzzy figure behind a two-way mirror.
Yeah.
It's being like, woohoo, look at me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're like, what the fuck is that? I'm not going to go towards that.
Yeah.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
And then having the bravery to do it and locks so much within you. It's just so weird. It's so weird having to do it.
Because my sister said to me the other day, we're having a little stroll, and she said, you know what's really, she goes, when you think back to it, because you were talking about the difference of me now to me 8 years ago when she first met me, and I was this little worry box, and, you know, very like, oh, seeing things for the first time. And she knew that, and she was quite nurturing with that and very helpful with different things. And then she's saying how much I've grown and matured as a person, but also with what I am like now in terms of, you know, anxiety and things and how I am, you know, adapt to situations or whatever. And she goes, it's crazy to think, she goes, where you were in that moment and you still left everything. You left Australia, you broke free of it all, and you just went, fuck it, I'm going to the UK. She goes, that actually took a lot of guts to do that.
That's pretty fucking extraordinary.
Yeah.
Because looking at you now and sort of like knowing you as you are now, and for her that's just the norm as it is. So it's only like that kind of 2020 hindsight of looking back and going, oh my God, that was you then.
Yeah, and you
how
did that?
Like, you now, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then, are you kidding me? And yeah. Actually the kind of the acknowledgement of that is really gratifying sometimes when you're like, actually, Jesus, that was a really, really big thing I did. That's really cool.
Yeah, and that's the thing is I think I look back and I go, fuck yeah, I was all right.
Yeah.
I did do all right. And, you know, I'm pretty proud of myself that I just upped and moved and broke free of it all and...
not just move, but move to Watford. That's the bravest bit.
And then I left Watford and I went to Nottingham.
So brave.
For 4 years.
Nottingham?
Yeah.
Blimey.
I know, yeah. No, Soph was doing her master's there at the uni, so I moved up there with her.
I did a show in Nottingham once.
I actually really fucking love Notts. It cops a lot of shit, but Notts is great.
It cops a lot of shit, but there is a really lovely pub. There are many, but there is one particularly really lovely one.
And a good music scene.
And
great prices because it's a student town. So they've got such great prices.
This episode is brought to you by Nottingham.
We'll always match the price, don't worry. But yeah, it's actually, I actually found myself in October last year in Australia after a show where I took on... finally, 7 years later, you know, October 2022, and I found myself in Perth after a show. I'm with my missus and two comics, and one of them offered me a spliff. And I was like, I've come to this moment and I grabbed it like a coffee. No, no.
It was that big, literally.
It's a huge spliff. This is a spliff for giants.
Yeah.
It was almost like I came full circle because I hit this moment where I've been offered a lot of drugs before and I always went, but I sort of stopped and I thought, and again, I'm not advocating drugs, but I looked at Soph and she looked at me and she goes, if you want to, I'll look after you.
Aww.
And she goes, you're with people that you love.
Yeah.
With one of your best mates in comedy.
Yeah.
If you want, just, we can, you can have a bit of fun right now and we'll all look after you sort of thing. And you're in the safest position you could be in.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a great point. So I had a couple of tokes and I felt nothing.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be like, because I was still drinking at the time. So I had a couple of pints.
Yeah.
So I already had a little buzz.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel anything. So I was like, oh, well, that was okay, whatever. Yeah. And then I got arrogant in that moment because I went, I don't feel anything. Yeah. I was expecting to be like this films, the cinema.
Oh, yeah.
Swirly colours. Whoa, man. I was going to be like, dude, where's my car sort of thing, you know what I mean? Like when you see the dog get high. That's what I thought it was going to be like.
Exactly.
Felt nothing. So my mate thought it would be hilarious. So he gave me my own joint and then I had that to myself, to which Soph at one point was like, okay, maybe just no, have the whole thing.
I went to rehab and I've never had my own joint.
Just to put things in perspective, Thomas.
For all the listeners.
And I'm pretty sure I flew around Perth. It took a while to kick in. And we went and got Vietnamese, which, by the way, was the best idea.
Oh, the best thing you did.
When I got Vietnamese. And then Soph went to get menus and stuff. And I'm sat there with her in this restaurant. I remember she's completely straight, like she was just looking after me, being an absolute gem, and the other two had gone back home, and I was sat in this Vietnamese restaurant on one in the morning. I'm like, I can't feel anything. And then she got up and left. And when I was on my own,
oh no!
That is when I realised,
because
the safety net of Soph being there the whole time, me feeling quite happy, everything being fine, I was then alone, and that's when I really noticed how slow the world had become.
Yeah.
And everything was low. And I was like, oh, my God. So I, did a thing where I left, a voice note to myself because I always do that. I used to write things down so that the next day if I read my anxieties, I realised they were silly. Because quite often it was late at night, I'd get anxious because, ADHD, you're up late at night thinking.
Yeah.
Overthinking. And then overanalyzing the overthinking. So I then, the next, I recorded or whatever. And then, but while I was there, I was trying to calm myself down by thinking about something fun. And that day we had gone whale watching, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And we went out on the coast outside Perth and there we were and we were with the marine biologist and this group of people. And the marine biologist was great because any questions you could just ask her, she'd tell you whatever you wanted to know. And we saw a mother whale and its calf, it was migration season. And she was like, oh, look at them, they're sleeping. And I was like, fuck off, they're swimming. I can see them swimming. How they...
Fuck off. You fucking lie.
Why would you say that? They're not fucking sleeping. I can see them. They're fucking swimming right there. And she goes, no, because I'd seen the images of whales, being vertical in the water or whatever. And I just assumed it's how they slept. And then she goes, no...
Just bobbing.
But she said, no, they, she goes, you can tell that they're sleeping from their swimming patterns.
Right.
And it's almost like clockwork. Mm. And she goes, they've actually got two sides of their brain. So one side of their brain shuts down and sleeps, and the other side is still ticking over and telling them to come up for air while they're unconscious, because if they don't manually tell themselves to come up for the air, because we automatically breathe, they don't. And I was like, this is information is amazing, but it's really interesting to know, but it's something I'll never need to think about ever again.
Mm.
And I never would know that information. But then, you know, when you're alone off your fucking kite at 1 a.m. in a Vietnamese restaurant, you think you have turned your breathing off like a whale.
Mm.
I'm sat there in this restaurant.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, I think I've turned my breathing off.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to like rejig my breathing.
I fucking love this. You never would have known this fact had you not gone whale watching.
Exactly.
And you're like, oh my God, this cannot be a coincidence that I've seen the whales. I've seen them turn their breathing off and it must be happening to me right now.
Exactly right.
Fucking hell. Literally, that thought would not even begin to enter your fucking stratosphere exactly. had you not seen it with Linda, the fucking whale biologist in the morning.
Exactly.
Jesus.
And then Soph comes back and I was trying to respond at a rate that was like acceptable because before I was a arrogant having tokes and then everything went to shit on my own. So she comes back and she's like, would you like something to eat?
Mm.
What would you like? Here's the menus. And I remember in that moment being like, okay, you need to respond correctly.
Yep.
Not too slow, not too fast. Hit the right frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Because before you were Mr. Fucking Arrogant and now you're part whale. I looked at her and I thought I'd responded pretty quickly and I went, have I taken a time to respond? And she goes, she looks at me and she goes, you have been staring at me for 4.5 minutes and hyperventilating and making whale noises. So apparently I was like Dory in Finding Nemo. And like going, trying to work out how to breathe. And then I went, have I taken a time to respond? Like it was just the perfect storm of whale worry. But no, I am.
Whale worry.
But that's the thing is like, and then I had the best sleep of my life. But I'm not advocating drugs. But I think for me, that whole thing of I did something that I had feared for years, took it on, and I'm not saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to smoke weed now, but it just meant like I did it.
Well, you did it and then you weren't afraid of it.
Exactly.
Like, it's just it wasn't the fucking boogeyman anymore.
Yes, exactly right. So if I see people now or I smell it because, you know, you're in London. You smell weed?
I always try and work out who it is as well.
Yeah. I always look at the windows going, who is it?
Which one of you?
Smoking.
I've got the narc.
Yeah. I've got the window. Hello.
Only me.
Honey.
Do you know that whales don't have their breathing? Just think about that.
Can you imagine if you or I have a guy touching out your own living room and someone popped their head, Emily specifically, pops their head to the window.
More little bobbed creature going,
hello. Did you know that whales can't breathe automatically like humans? Cheerio. Just let you ponder on that one. You would be sick.
You just think on that.
Oh, I will, little creature.
Farewell. Fucking great. That's why I should make a whole TV series of just me doing that.
You're just popping up every now and then telling random facts. That would be a great stoner show where they would learn information.
Yeah.
You could pop your head up. Just talking about different animals' facts.
Oh, let's pitch it.
Let's do it. We're going
to
show.
I can't remember we've gone to. Oh, yeah, so this, like, the, yeah, I mean, only, I'm not advocating the use of drugs. I'm like, really not. Neither of us are.
No.
But there is a certain thing, like, if you're really afraid of something and it is something that is, like, basically part of the culture. And to be so afraid of that to then actually take some kind of ownership over it, it does help to...
Yeah, it's kind of like people who are terrified of heights and then they go and jump out of a plane. And, I mean, I couldn't. I know I physically couldn't. I am terrified. But I always look at people when I think, fair play. Like, if you've taken on something... Because I had a friend who did it, absolutely terrified, and she thought, fuck it. And she went with her partner and jumped out of a plane, skydiving, and had, the adrenaline and everything, and she had the best time ever. And she's then got the footage of that and the evidence of her taking on her fear. And I'm like, fair play. And I feel like, in a way, that's kind of... I know it's a lot more subdued, and not as quiet as an adrenaline rush, but it was for me because weed in particular, just the smell of it would set me off with anxiety for so many years. To then just go, fuck it, I'm with people that I feel safe with.
It's all right.
It's okay. And I'm, again, not advocating, but it was just me taking on something that I was so scared of. And then I was like, oh, I'm okay. And now...
I love it. Yeah. I love the idea. I know it is this thing of, you know, facing your fears. The thing is, like, jumping out of a plane, that, like, my big thing was, like, I'd have to go spend a day with, like, a tax man. That's that would be facing my greatest fear.
There are too many numbers.
I spend a day as an accountant.
Well, now I watch Free Willy. Have you seen that film, Free Willy? Do you remember that film?
Yeah.
Now I watch it and I know what he's saying.
What the whale is saying?
The whale's saying, I've learned whale.
Love Free Willy.
Yeah. Great films.
Lovely film.
They were. Yeah. They were very good.
At this point in the podcast, I'd like to ask the question, which often people find very uncomfortable.
Right, okay. Well, let me get comfy.
We talked a lot about anxiety, but what are the things about you as a person that you really love and cherish and are very proud of?
Oh. How long have you got?
I love it. That's always my favourite.
Like I was saying earlier, I think I always value the importance of being someone that other people enjoy spending time with. And I think that is valuable in a lot of, like, whether it's professional relationships or friendships or whatever. And I think that's something for me, that's a trait that I try to always be a positive person and a happy person that people want to be around and feel comfortable with. So I quite often, you know, if I meet someone, especially like in green rooms and things, people, comics can be awkward. And comics can struggle in certain situations. So I always want people to feel comfortable. So I sort of take on, sometimes I can see them, I would sort of make them feel safe and comfortable. And because that's something that I would want to feel.
So
I think that's something that I sort of...
I think that's a really amazing trait. I honestly think it's a really beautiful thing to have. Because it's, it's, and also it's not like something that just gives away a huge part of yourself. It's just you being a good person. It's not you taking on other people's emotions and like trying to fix it. It's just being like, hey, you may be struggling and I'm just going to help out right now.
Yeah, I hear that. I think, and it's important, I think, to sort of really do things in a way that you would like things done. I think, I guess that is in a way a religious saying, you know, do unto others. But like, really, I think if you value things, I mean, obviously everyone's got different perspectives and feelings and thoughts and things. And some people don't, like, I don't be, and again, I don't also don't be overbearing. So I know some people don't want to be spoken to and they'd rather, you know, might be an introvert. And so talking to them in a green room, I can sort of gauge that, you know what I mean? I think that's something else, is I sort of can gauge people pretty well. So I don't, I make sure that I'm not like,
hello,
let me talk to you about whales.
That's my job. I think that's, really cool. And finding that balance is really awesome as well.
What about you?
I think, like, the one, because every so often someone asks that back, and I always think, I'm boring. I'm such a dickhead. I think, like, my main thing is, because, like, what happened with me was just, like, so awful and so bad. when I had my like full-on breakdown and ended up in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
The coming back from that, mm-hmm. With virtually no assistance, mm-hmm. From, because I lost a lot of friends and I lost a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
and sort of crawling my way back, I think took a lot of guts and a lot of bravery. So I always now look at myself as a really brave person. And I think that's really cool. Also, I'm just fucking nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, really fucking nice.
Yeah.
And really pretty.
And I always smell good.
I always smell good. And like, I can talk to the animals. And Jenny just like really funny.
But like, I feel really like what you were saying is like you were talking about earlier, like you said that, you know, maybe that's a trait. In the family, the resilience.
Mm,
you know, you've got a resilient factor there that you were able to, on your own, work through stuff.
Mm.
I think that's huge. And then I think we're quite similar in that, what you're saying there about being nice.
Mm.
I find sometimes it's at my own detriment.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I've been learning that in the last year and a half to 2 years especially, where I've been learning to also like go, hang on, no, what's also good for me?
Yeah, and that's what I really struggle with.
Yeah.
I really, really struggle with that.
Yeah, because I'm so conscious of how others feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, say yes to this or that or a job or whatever.
Yeah.
When I go, no, actually, that's not what I want.
Yeah. I mean, there's sort of friends and relationships that I realized weren't really serving me particularly. Mm-hmm. And actually, I felt quite uncomfortable around, quite anxious around.
Mm.
But I felt like obliged to keep going and always like apologize and, you know,
bend love
and
a good cull.
Fucking
cull. Love a good cull.
I was like, I'm like a bitch agent, just like getting rid of all my clients. at this point, of course, we could call this little section Thank You Letters, where we ask you to express gratitude for a person, a place, or a thing, or one of all three, or just one in particular, one or two, but something for which you are grateful, or someone.
I would say my fiancé.
Sophie.
Yeah, Sophie, yeah, because she is someone who saw me at the worst of my anxiety,
mm-hmm.
and has always been a massive advocate of my career, and my biggest fan, so to speak, and has helped me through so much. And now seeing me where I am now, still encouraging and still loving and caring, and I think like she's a hell of a woman, you know.
Yeah.
And she's, like I said, very strong. And just also very supportive. So I think I'm very grateful for her because, you know, she also allowed me the space to grow as well. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like she acknowledged, I think, at the time when I look back on it, that there was things I had to mature with and I had to learn.
Mm.
And she noted that, but she was also quite educational,
you
know what I mean? With
yeah.
in the relationship perspective, with me just growing as a partner and becoming a better one, working through my own fears and anxieties. So yeah, for me, I think that's who I'm majorly grateful for in my life. She's my queen.
Love her.
Yeah.
And the cats.
Oh yeah. Oh god. Yeah. My cats are great.
How many cats you got?
Got two.
What are they called?
They're Daffodil. Is Daffy because she was born in the springtime. Yeah, she's our little daffodil. And so Daffy and Mika, they're both sisters from two different litters. Same dad, different mums. And
oh my god, that's like my sister.
I really connect
that's
with your cat.
That's like my little brother. Oh my god, same dad, different mums. I'm reading it. Get it.
They're pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love a ragdoll as well.
Mickey's a half ragdoll. He's half ragdoll, half Maine Coon.
Really?
Mm.
Oh, wow. Is that the one I just met?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, yeah, because the short hair threw me off of the Maine Coon side.
Mm. Michael.
I was always a dog person growing up.
Yeah, me too.
And then I got cats and people who go, I don't like cats. Mm. I'm like, you don't even know.
You don't fucking know. You're fucking talking about.
Let me talk about cats, and you'll appreciate it because cats are fucking amazing, okay? I'm going to get really angry about this right now. I've learned a lot from my cats, okay?
My cat's protected me.
In that voice, it's so sinister. My cats protect me. Whenever I'm in a bad situation, my cats come through.
My cats are there.
So what would you even know about cats?
It's a fucking effort. All right. Thank you so much for coming here today. Thank you so much for being
for
so
me.
Wonderful and open. Thank you so much for... And it sounds like I'm crying because I'm laughing.
It's good tears. It's happy tears.
It's a lot of happy tears. But thank you so much. It's been so much fun. I will link everything down below. Is there anything coming up that we can talk about, or is it chic and you're not allowed to tell anybody?
No, I start my very first UK tour.
Wow!
Next week!
Well, I'm going to link all of that below. Please go and see Thomas Green on tour.
Yeah! I'm going all over the UK and Ireland. Come and see me!
Woo! I'll link all of that below, but thank you so much for coming today. We loved it.
Thank you, Emily.
Yay!
I'm going to call you Em.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.